They had all been in movies and TV shows, and some of them had been acting since they were kids. Which means while I was running around chasing my friends with a knife in some shitty house in Long Beach, they were on some set of a Hollywood movie eating craft services and trying to divorce their parents. They had the life we normal people only dream about. Most of them were actually really nice. My first scene was with the lead girl who played my love interest. Having to act in love with someone you just met is incredibly awkward, especially when you have just scarfed down a triple-layer burrito in the backseat of your car 15 minutes earlier and your breath smells like bean farts. Luckily, we decided to save the kiss until we got on set a few days later. That gave me plenty of time to get my mouth ready. I wanted it to be perfect for her. Not because I wanted her to fall in love with me or anything, but because I didn't want her to go on Twitter afterwards and say, OMG, just kissed at Shane Dawson and he tasted like Chipotle diarrhea. So for the next few days, I ate 2 packs of mints a day, wore 4 coatings of ultra-glossy chapstick, and brushed my teeth in the morning and at night. That last one was the most challenging for me. Up until a year ago, I didn't even know that brushing your teeth twice a day was the social norm. My philosophy was once in the morning, and that's it. Why do you need to do it before bed? Who are you trying to get fancy for? It's sleep, not prom. The first week of production was great. I ate mass amounts of craft service, didn't fuck up my lines, and was even taught by a sassy extra how to twerk upside down with my feet up against the wall. It was everything I had dreamed of as a kid, except for that twerking part. That wasn't really a thing, but if it was, you better bet my ass would have been twerking all over my house naked, covered in ketchup. Everything was going great until the last day of the shoot. I should have known it was going to be a rough day considering I had like 5 rape dreams in a row the night before, and I usually only have like 2. I also had some serious bacne going on, and I know bacne doesn't sound like a big deal, but when you love popping zits as much as I do, and you have a cluster of ready-to-go whiteheads chilling on an unreachable part of your back, oh, it's a nightmare. I used every item in my house I could find to try to pop them. At one point, I had a pair of scissors taped to a Swiffer, and I shoved the Swiffer in between my mattress and my box spring, got into a squat position, and leaned back. Unfortunately, that just left me with numerous cuts and a really bloody Swiffer. Needless to say, as I walked up to the set that day, I already felt off kilter. Since this was the first day we were shooting in a house, we had trailers set up outside. I was super pumped because I had never been inside of a trailer before. I had heard stories of actors having sex and popping painkillers, and I was so excited to do the exact opposite. I was planning on falling asleep and possibly giving myself an over-the-jeans handy. What can I say? I'm a tease. But as I walked into my trailer, I was stopped by a producer and was told that unfortunately there was a problem and I wouldn't be able to stay there. My first thought was, who clogged the toilet? My second thought was, for once it wasn't me who clogged the toilet? Awesome! And then as I walked away, I noticed another actor walking into my trailer and closing the door. Does he know the toilet's clogged? Should we tell him? It looks like he eats a lot of kale, so I'm assuming he's only going to make matters worse. The producer said, the toilet isn't clogged. Oh, then why am I not there? Is it because you think I'm going to do the nasty in there? Because I promise it's only above the jeans. No, it's because the actor requested a trailer and it was the last one left. But it was mine. It had a sign with my name on it. Granted, it was spelled wrong and I'm pretty sure someone extinguished their cigarette on it, but it was still mine. Ugh, he's being kind of a diva. He said he would call his agent if he didn't get a trailer. Would you mind doing us a solid and just letting him have it? Do I have a choice? The producer looked at me with that not-really look that reminded me of when I used to visit the school nurse and ask if I was in my healthy weight range. So I sucked it up and headed inside the house. He told me that there was a room where I could hang out. He pointed to a door that had a "Don't let the cats out" sign on it. Perfect. But I'm not a diva, so I threw my stuff down on some cats and whipped out my phone and looked up that actor's Twitter to see how many followers he had. I saw that he had less than 1,000, and I had 1,000,000. That gave me a few good minutes of shallow but necessary joy. I also love that he gave his fans a pet name, yet every tweet that he would send out to them had 0 likes and 0 retweets. It felt like a little gift from baby Jesus. Anyways, the first scene was coming up, and it was the one I had been waiting for, the big kiss. I hoped she wasn't allergic to cats. My friend, the director, walked up to me with the girl playing my love interest and let us know how it was going to go down. Okay, so you guys are going to slowly kiss and then make your way to the bed. Cool, my love interest said. Cool, I said. This was going well. Just two professional actors about to make out on camera in front of hundreds of fat dudes holding up lights and holding in their farts. Totally easy. Everything was going great, until another actress playing the part of my love interest's best friend walked over and grabbed her away from me. They walked to the other side of the room, and it looked like they were getting into some kind of intense conversation. You would have thought they were actually best friends, not just playing them in some horror movie. Me being the nosiest person in the world, I decided to walk past them and completely eavesdrop on their conversation. The girl playing the BFF chimed in. Don't do anything you aren't comfortable with. My love interest replied.
What do you mean?
I've done plenty of love scenes before, and the guy always tries to shove his tongue down your throat. One guy even flicked my nipple.
What? Why?
I don't know. I guess nipple flicking is a thing in Japan. It was a foreign movie. Anyways, the point is, don't let him do anything to you.
I don't think he's going to. He seems sweet.
So do the Japanese. Tell that to my nipple. I was pissed. How could this random actress, who I had never even spoken to, assume that I was some kind of pervert who was trying to fuck my co-star? If anything, I just wanted to do my job as quickly as possible so I could go home and finish binge-watching some terrible reality show about a family whose life is way worse than mine. So as we got ready to do the scene, I noticed the crazy actress standing next to the camera and staring at my love interest with, "Don't worry, I'm right here," eyes. I felt like I was about to make out with a girl while her overprotective mom watched. It was incredibly creepy, and because of my mommy issues, slightly a turn-on. Action! We went in for the kiss. And to say it was the worst kiss I had ever had would be an understatement. I've had better kisses from my gay uncle, and he likes to use a lot of tongue. Cut! The director pulled us aside. That was great! Let's just do it one more time, this time a little less Amish kids experimenting with their siblings. So we tried again, and it somehow got worse. We did it about 5 times, and then the director took us aside again. As we walked away, I looked over at the crazy actress, and she was giving my love interest a thumbs up. A thumbs up? For what? For the most incestuous love scene ever put on film legally? This isn't working. The kiss is giving me goosebumps, guys, and not in a good way, and I just found out my dad likes butt play way.
Why are you looking at me?
I'm not. I'm looking at both of you.
No, you aren't. Just me.
Okay. It's looking a little forced on your end. Is everything okay? Am I doing something to make you uncomfortable? I mean, I swear, I don't have a boner. That's just how my pants look when I sit.
No, it's fine. Let's just do it again.
She walked back to the bed, and I stayed around to talk to the director more. I think the other actress is getting in her head. She told her I would flick her clitoris or something. What? I don't know, some Chinese guy in some movie stuck his finger in her butt or something. I don't remember specifics. Well, just try to make her comfortable, Shane. Be charming. Be you. Have you met me? So I walked back over and sat on the bed next to my terrified lover. So, see any movies lately?
No. You?
I watched a documentary last night about these kids who killed their parents and then had sex in their beds. Smooth. The director called action one last time, and we went for it. It was slightly better, but still felt like I was forcing my comatose sister to make out with me. Then the crazy actress screamed out, "Okay, you guys got it!" She grabbed my love interest and took her off set. I walked up to the director. "Dude, what the fuck was that?" "The best we're gonna get?" "No, I'm talking about the insane actress with the crazy people eyes and the Adderall breath." "You forgot all her IMDb credits." Ah, fucking IMDb. After that, I went home and thought about how terrible the kiss was. I couldn't stop thinking about it. A few weeks later, I got to see my love interest at an ADR session. ADR stands for Automated Dialogue Replacement, which is used when you have to record your voice and add it to the movie, usually when your microphone wasn't working on set.
We talked about the awkward kissing situation, and she told me how nervous she had been to kiss on camera. It was her first time, so I totally understood where she was coming from. She also said it didn't help that the crazy actress girl was trying to act like a big sister and keep her safe from all the big, mean, rapist actors on set. I'm not sure what gave that girl the impression that I was some rapey perv, but honestly, I was just happy she didn't assume I was gay like every other stranger I meet daily. The coolest part about the whole experience is that one day when I have my own kid, I can show them their very first scary movie, and it'll be one that their daddy's in. I'll just skip the makeout scene. I don't want them to think that's what kissing looks like. I'll just show them some porn for that. The Mean Girl Got Fat. You know when you're watching a terrible sitcom and something completely unrealistic happens to the main character, and you're forced to suspend all disbelief until the show is over? Actually, that's every sitcom episode ever made. One day, I lived out one of my childhood fantasies and got to be the lead character in the shittiest sitcom ever created, My Life. It started as a pretty typical day. I got up 2 hours early to straighten my embarrassingly long hair. I needed it to look extra stylish in preparation for my new position. I worked at a weight loss center, and I had been promoted from counselor to salesperson. The difference was that when you were a counselor, you would weigh the client and then offer them a little bit of wisdom. When you're the salesperson, you would introduce them to the program and beg them to give you their money and then hand them off to someone else to deal with. It may sound like salesperson would have been an uncomfortable job, but being a counselor was way more uncomfortable, considering most clients like to take off all their clothes at the scale and give you a big naked hug if they'd lost a pound. Knowing that today I wasn't going to have to hug another naked, frizzy-haired soccer mom while some Kenny G played on the lobby sound system in the background made my life feel so much more worth living. I finished my hair, got into my tiny car, and practiced my sales pitch while I was driving to work. As I walked into the center, I was assaulted by my coworker, Mag. She threw me into her office and locked the door. "Mag, what's going on?" "Nothing. Want a donut? They're filled." "You dragged me in here for a donut?" "No, I dragged you in here for a filled donut." This was an odd behavior for Mag. She was a loud, outrageous, hilariously outspoken old Jew with a thick New Jersey accent and enough perfume to cover up the scent of a dead, rotting body in her basement. Which, by the way, is the reason she gave me for why she wore so much perfume. She was also a cancer survivor and would tell you every chance she got. Sometimes when a client would complain about gaining a pound, she would tell them, "Hey, at least you have both your breasts. I have to draw on my second nipple with an eyebrow pencil." She really knew how to give clients some perspective. No thanks, I gave up donuts a while ago. "Come on, live a little. You know what happens when guys cut out sugar?" "They lose weight?" "Yeah, and they murder their wives and children. I heard about it on Dr. Oz." "Well, I'm not married and I don't have kids, so I'll take my chances." "So, you nervous for your first day as a salesman? Listen, if they don't give you their money, take down their information and steal their identity." "There is nothing like taking a me day at the spa while pretending to be some bitch you hate." "You do that?" "You a cop? Why are you asking so many questions?" "I just don't want to mess up, Mag. This is a big deal, you know?" "Honey, if you mess up, you can just dust yourself off and try again. It's like I tell my clients, if you gained weight this week, just go home, have yourself a good cry and a donut, and start over tomorrow."
"You tell your clients to eat donuts?"
"Of course. Your body needs sugar. It's like air, but filled."
"How many of your clients have actually lost all their weight?"
None. "Donut?"
Mag wasn't the best counselor. Hell, she was the worst. But she made up for it with her spirit. She probably should have been fired for not getting her clients to lose weight, but they loved coming in to see her so much that it really didn't matter. It was a business after all, and the bosses didn't really care about weight loss. They just wanted customers to keep coming back. So I walked out of Mag's office and into the lobby where I saw an overweight young woman sitting nervously reading a magazine. I had never seen her here before, so I knew she was a new customer. The first thing I had been trained to do when a new customer came in was to greet them and hand them a health sheet to fill out. So I grabbed one, took a deep breath, and walked up to my first potential sale.
"Hi there, my name is Shane. What's your name?"
The girl looked up at me.
"Lacey."
As she grabbed the health sheet out of my hand, we locked eyes. I turned white as a ghost. I knew Lacey. I instantly had a flashback to 2 years ago when I was sitting in my high school biology class, passing back a stack of tests to the girl behind me. It was Lacey. She was thin and beautiful and everything that terrified me about women. She was a cheerleader with a 4.0 grade point average and more sexual experience than the sex ed teacher. One time she corrected him because he said the vagina only had 3 inches of feeling and she had proof it was 9. She was a mean girl in every sense of the word. Every day she would ask me questions about my outfit or my appearance, not because she was curious, but because she was trying to make her horrible friends laugh. Here's a sample conversation from 2006.
"Where did you get that shirt? It's super sexy."
Walmart, I think.
"Wow, really? I never would have guessed that. I love the way it highlights your back muscles. How often do you go to the gym to get back muscles like that? I mean, you must have a six-pack back there."
I didn't have back muscles. The bitch was referring to the rolls of fat that were squished underneath my shirt between my shoulder blades and my ass. She was a soulless demon monster, and she was now sitting in front of me, 300 pounds, and potentially my first sale.
Fill this out. I'll be right back.
I casually ran into my office and slammed the door. I started hyperventilating into a brown lunch bag like a cartoon character having a panic attack. Mag walked into the room and tried to calm me down.
"What's going on? Here, have some casserole."
I was too panicked to ask how she had managed to procure a vat of piping hot casserole with no oven in sight, only disgusting decades-old microwaves stuck in the dusty corner of the employee's break room. All I could think about was how my ex-high school enemy was sitting 100 feet away from me.
"That girl out there?"
"Oh yeah, saw her at the donut shop earlier. Bitch took all the jellies."
She's...
"Spit it out, Shane, I got shit to do. Oprah's on in 5 minutes and she's interviewing a woman whose face was ripped off by an ape. I only have 4 minutes and 59 seconds to finish this casserole."
That girl made my life hell in high school.
"What did she do? Swoop up all the tater tots in the cafeteria before you could?"
"No. She was the skinny, hot cheerleader who reminded me how fat I was every day."
"She was a hot cheerleader? Wow. Did she eat the mascot?"
"I don't know what to do."
"Did she recognize you?"
"No."
"Well, then get revenge on that pom-pom twirling cunt."
"What do you mean?"
"Sign her up and then give it to me as a client. I'll make sure she doesn't lose weight. Hey, I can even get her fatter. I'll tell her that she should do the mayo and cream cheese diet. It might even kill her."
"I don't know."
"Okay, well, you figure it out. I gotta go. Ape face is on."
I took a deep breath and walked out of the lobby. Lacey had finished filling out her health sheet, so I walked her back to the scale. We made small talk.
So, what brings you in today?
I just need to get off all this baby weight.
Baby weight? She had baby weight?
Oh, the plot was thickening, and this had just gone from a sitcom to a Diablo Cody movie, except less witty banter and more sad fat tears.
"So, does your husband know you're here?"
"Oh, I don't have one."
"Single parent at 20?
Okay, this had just gone from a Diablo Cody movie to an MTV reality show, except with less weave snatching, but the same number of sad fat tears. As I turned on the scale, she looked at it with fear in her eyes. I started feeling less intimidated by her. She wasn't the evil queen bee I hid from in high school. She was a sad girl who had been through a lot of hardship since then. I didn't quite know how to deal with this revelation. I wanted to cry, but I also wanted to punch her in the head for calling me six-pack back fat for 4 years. But from the looks of it, life had already punched her in the head, and then kicked her while she was down. We went back to my office and sat down. She teared up and I handed her a tissue.
"So, tell me a little bit about why you want to lose the weight."
"Well, after I found out I was pregnant, I fell into a depression. I just started eating everything around me. My boyfriend left when he found out about the baby. It's fine, though. He was an asshole anyways. I was only with him because he was the only guy I had ever been with in high school. I guess I was just too scared to leave."
She was right. He was an asshole. Her boyfriend had been a football-playing douchebag and had always made my life miserable. One time he started a rumor that I had herpes. Not from sex, but from a dirty toilet seat I sat on at Del Taco. The sad part is, it's totally possible. I used to use a lot of toilets at a lot of Del Tacos. Sometimes your body just can't wait till you get home. What made you want to lose the weight now? I'm tired of hiding. I haven't seen my friends in over a year because I don't want them to see me like this. I was scared to even come today because I thought, I don't know, maybe somebody would recognize me. I usually just take care of the baby and ask my mom to go out and get groceries and stuff. I don't even remember the last time I did something fun on the weekend. I wanted to tell Lacey who I was, but I was afraid it would make her run away. So instead I listened and tried to explain to her how the weight loss program worked. We talked for about an hour, and it was time to assign her to a counselor. Mag walked past the door of my office with a big smile on her face. She couldn't wait to get her evil hands on Lacey and fill her up like a human eclair. But I couldn't do that. I ended up giving her to a counselor who would actually help her lose weight. I walked Lacey out to her car. Before she got in, I broke the news to her. Lacey, I want to tell you something. Is everything okay? I'm Shane. From high school? It took her a few moments, but then it hit her like a truck full of mayo and cream cheese. Oh my god! Wow! You're skinny! Yeah, thanks. I just wanted you to know that I'm not mad at you for the way you treated me in high school. How did I treat you? The way that I used to treat a toilet at Del Taco? Wow, that bad? Yeah. You don't remember? Not really. I kind of blocked out those 4 years. High school was terrible. Every day I hoped I would get trampled to death by the school band. What? But you were popular and hot. Thanks. I mean, not that you're not hot now. I'm just saying, in high school, your life was great. It's funny. Everybody always thinks that. I guess I put on quite a good act. Yeah, I guess you did. She reached out and hugged me. If Lacey from 2 years ago had known that one day she'd be giving me a hug, I'm sure she would have vomited all over her pom-poms. I'm sorry I was such a bitch to you. It's okay. I guess we all hated high school, didn't we? Yeah. She got in her car and drove off. I was upset that she didn't remember how horribly she had treated me, but I guess I never thought about her reasons for doing so. She must have been dealing with a lot of issues that made her take out her anger on me. It doesn't make it right, but it makes it slightly understandable. Either way, I just had my first successful sale on my first day as a salesperson, and I felt seriously accomplished. I walked right into Mag's office and sat down next to her. You want a donut? Hell yeah. My girl space friends. I'm not really what you would consider a manly man. Hell, I don't even really consider myself a man at all. I'm more of a woman with man parts. Kinda like that scene in Toy Story where that asshole kid made a toy out of Barbie's torso and G.I. Joe's limbs. I'm pretty sure that's how God made me. He probably had an oops pile full of body parts and decided to throw them all together and make a human gumbo. Because my brain and heart skew more feminine, I was always surrounded by girl friends. Yes, that space was intentional. I had never had a girlfriend until my early 20s, but up until then, I had an ever-changing collection of girl space friends. I met my first girl space friend when I was around 6 years old, and her name was Kaylee. We lived a few houses apart from each other and hung out pretty much every day after school. We had very similar interests, like playing with Barbies, watching Mrs. Doubtfire on a loop, and peeing the bed. Okay, that last one was just me. But she didn't judge me for it. When I would sleep over at her house, her mom would give me a rubber sheet to tuck into my sleeping bag, turning it into a human-sized condom. It wasn't the most comfortable thing in the world, but it was a lot better than completely destroying their living room carpet. We were friends up until I was about 10. I'm not really sure what happened or why we drifted apart, but I do remember a bizarre incident in which I punched her in the vagina to see if it hurt as bad as getting punched in the balls. That little experiment might have caused her to rethink our friendship. Understandable. I met my next girl space friend when I was 11 years old, and her name was Sarah.
She was a little more experimental than Kaylee, which is probably why we got along. A punch to the vagina was never out of the question. I'm pretty sure she let me finger her once. It wasn't sexual at all. It was more, you know, just to see what was in there. I was convinced that women had hidden jewels inside of them. Call me a pussy pirate. But our friendship wasn't just about discovering each other's bodies. It was also about discovering each other's mental issues. I'm pretty sure she was schizophrenic, and I'm pretty sure I was a pathological liar. Her imaginary friends were way too detailed, and at one point, I told her that I was actually an alien from another planet, and I believed it. Neither of us sought out psychiatric counseling, but we played doctor a lot, so that balances everything out, right? We ended our friendship because I moved across town, and long-distance friendships don't really work when you're 11. This was pre-internet, so we didn't have Twitter to follow each other on. It was almost like she died, and I totally forgot about her. Wow. Through the next 15 years, I had many more girl-space friends. They were all different and unique in their own ways. Some of them were crazy, some of them were adventurous, some of them were in wheelchairs, but they all shared one trait. They were all non-judgmental. I can't stand judgmental people. The second someone lifts their eyebrow at a situation, I cut them out of my life. I like to live in a world where people can be whoever the fuck they want to be and say whatever the fuck they want to say. It's interesting to me. Entertaining, even. I'm a glorified people watcher, and there's nothing better than sitting back, no judgment, of course, and watching people be themselves. It's like TV, but with no commercials. Like a movie, but with no annoying turn-off-your-phone ads. Like a play, but... ugh, never mind. I kind of fucking hate plays. They're the worst. It's not judgmental to say that, right? Oh well, I already said it. Can't take it back. The one girl space friend who lasted the longest is Kate. We met when we were in the sixth grade and bonded over the fact that we were both total fucking losers. That's usually how I bond with people, over a realization that we're both lame and need each other. Probably not the healthiest way to start a friendship, but hey, what friendships are really all that healthy anyways? My friendships are usually like big bags of fattening potato chips with a big jar of processed cheese on the side for dipping. Finger-lickingly unhealthy. Anyways, we stayed friends throughout middle school and high school, and she's the only friend from the past I still see on a weekly basis. We lost touch slightly in high school, mainly because we both got boobs over the summer after 8th grade. Hers got her a few new cool friends, and mine kept me in the loser circle. Kate has seen me at my worst, my best, and my pretty much all the time mediocre. They say friendships between boys and girls always turn romantic no matter how hard you try to fight it. Those people are whores with no self-control. Wow, that was pretty judgmental of me. Okay, let me backtrack. I'm not gonna lie, there was a moment in time when Kate and I dipped our toes into that cold, frigid, unsanitary lake of more than friends, but it lasted literally 2 hours. I remember those 2 hours vividly. I was 18 and I picked her up from her house on a Friday night like I always did. I just had my car washed because the night before I hit some kind of animal on the freeway. To this day, I tell myself it was a possum so I can sleep at night. It was definitely a puppy. Most likely a rescue. Most likely owned by a child who needed it. Anyways, I honked my horn and she ran out of her house like someone blew the starting air horn at a marathon. I'm not exactly sure what was going on in her house, but it must have been pretty bad for her to bolt out like that. I'm assuming a family game of Monopoly, or worse, Yahtzee. Ugh. So she got into my car and we went off to have one of our weekly adventures. These usually consisted of trips to the mall, maybe a dinner at Denny's, sometimes a movie, and always ended with us watching hours of YouTube videos of people falling down and or having fatal accidents. One of our favorite videos was a baby getting hit by a bus. I promise, it was way funnier than it sounds. At dinner, we had a moment, not like in the movies where two friends look at each other and see more. And then they kiss in the rain and they say through the happy tears things like, I can't believe it took me so long to realize this, or it's always been you. It wasn't like that at all. It was more of a, well, I guess if we wanted to date each other, we could. Like, it would be pretty easy and convenient. I mean, we see each other all the time. I mean, we're practically married anyways. See, not that romantic. The thought wasn't totally random, though. A waitress came over and said, "Aw, you guys are a cute couple." We didn't say anything. We didn't deny it. We didn't say thank you. We just sat there. We looked at each other with, eh, I guess, maybe, in our eyes. We talked it out over a huge basket of sweet potato fries and milkshakes. Once again, I wasn't exaggerating when I said my friendships were unhealthy.
So, should we date? I said through a mouthful of greasy mush.
I don't know, she said with a huge drip of milkshake going from her mouth to her shirt. And then the conversation went a little something like this.
I mean, aren't we kind of already dating?
I guess. My parents think we are. They also think I'm a lesbian and that you're gay.
Cool. I like your parents.
They're okay, I guess.
Chewing, swallowing, sipping. So, should we go on a real date?
Okay. Isn't that just dinner and a movie? I mean, we kinda already did that. Well, if I would have known it was a date, I would have put on deodorant and not talked about trimming my ball hair for the first time. I can't believe you used your mom's mustache scissors to do that.
Yeah, I hope she doesn't find out. More chewing, more swallowing, more sipping, silence.
I don't want to stop talking about your ball hair, or stop telling you about my weird growths on my body.
Yeah, me neither. Well, the ball hair thing. You can really stop talking about those growths. I get it. You have melanoma. Don't rub it in my face.
Laughter. Chewing. Staring. Friends?
Yeah, friends. Smiling. Pause. A loud fart. Wow, I really thought that would have been quieter.
Nope, everyone heard it.
Awesome. Check!
So after that, we never talked about it again. We weren't meant for each other in that way. We were meant for each other in a different way. She'd become part of my family, a sister of sorts, and to this day I can't imagine my life without her. She's one of the only things in my life that's a constant, and I cherish that. So Kate, if you're listening to this, thank you for wanting to hear about my balls and not caring about my gassy stomach. But seriously, stop talking about your growths. It's fucking disgusting. Just go to the doctor already. God.
My strange addictions. The smell of death and pee bags filled my nose as I laid in the silence of a crunchy plastic bedsheet. I was 19 and once again found myself in an emergency room hospital bed on a Sunday morning. I was used to this by now, considering I had been there at least 6 times already that year. Before I get into why I treated the ER like a rich person's vacation home, I want to give you some backstory about some issues I've had my whole life. I'm addicted to everything. I know a lot of people say they have a chocolate addiction because they have an extra scoop of ice cream for dessert, or they have a shoe addiction because they have one too many pairs in their closet. I don't just get an extra scoop of Rocky Road, or have one too many pairs of Skechers Shape-Ups. Yes, I actually own those. Don't judge me. I'm severely addicted to everything I see or touch that gives me any sense of joy. Luckily, I'm not addicted to my Skechers Shape-Ups. Those were murder on my calves and didn't give me the ass they promised in the commercial. When I was a kid, I became addicted to food. And not in a typical way kids do, but in a Hoover vacuum sucking up everything in its path kind of way. I wouldn't just eat one Oreo. I would eat the whole box and then move on to something else. I remember at one point running out of real food, so I started eating condiments and spices. You haven't lived till you've had a ketchup pepper soup. Mmm. Every time I would go to a friend's house, I couldn't even focus on the games we were playing because all I was thinking about was what was in their kitchen. I had one friend who was always stocked up on name brands like Pop-Tarts and Coca-Cola, unlike my house which just had generic brand breakfast bars and dark brown drink. All I could think was, why aren't we all eating right now? They have so much food. If I was them, I would put a chair in front of the fridge and just go at it. Preferably a chair with no armrests, just so I could fully let myself expand. When my mom and I would take trips to the store, she would have to drag me out of there because I would just stand in the aisle and stare at every single product. If I could have eaten the entire store, clerks and baggers included, I would. I'm not above cannibalism. Another one of my addictions was Friends. No, not the television show about a fictional New York City that has no black people in it. Actual friends. When I met someone I liked, I would want to spend every second with them. They became my ketchup pepper soup, minus the stomach ulcers.
I wanted to be at their house, hang out with their family, play with their dog, skin them alive and wear them as a bodysuit.
That last one might be an exaggeration, but the thought did cross my mind a few times. Except I was way bigger than my friends, so I would probably have to sew, like, two friends together. Or maybe just wear their face as a mask. God, I've thought about this way too much. Every year I would have a new friend, because every year my current friend would become so overwhelmed by my clinginess that they would stop hanging out with me. This is something that I still struggle with, but to a lesser extent. When I start feeling myself becoming addicted to hanging out with someone, I limit the amount of time I see them. I'm scared I'll fall into that old habit and start thinking about how good their flesh would feel on mine in that bloody skin suit. When I was 17 years old, I had a pretty rough experience that made me want to lose all my weight and lose it fast. I was with all my friends at an amusement park, and we were going to ride the newest, most extreme roller coaster. I hadn't ridden a roller coaster since I was a kid, so I was super pumped to get thrown around by a machine and then vomit into a trash can filled with cotton candy wrappers afterwards. After I made my way onto the ride, I realized that the seatbelt wasn't big enough to go around my waist. I had a full-on panic attack. How could this be? I was fat, but I wasn't that fat. Well, turns out I was. One of the workers walked over and escorted me off the ride. All my friends watched as I burst into tears and was taken to the exit. That was one of the worst days of my life. And even thinking about it now makes me feel like vomiting into an amusement park trash can. That experience set me into overdrive. I lost 150 pounds in less than a year by eating nothing but chicken and doing nothing but running. I stopped hanging out with friends, and I stopped being able to have normal conversations with anyone because all I wanted to talk about was weight loss and health. I literally became one of those annoying-ass clerks that you try to avoid at Whole Foods, except I wore deodorant. While I was losing weight, I became addicted to something that was more harmful than any typical drug. I became addicted to the artificial sugar known as Splenda. Now, I know this is going to sound insane, and I'm sure you aren't going to fully believe me, but at my peak, I was eating over 250 packets of Splenda a day. That's enough to last a normal person over a year. That's 250 times more than any human should consume, considering one of the ingredients in Splenda is the same ingredient they use in pool cleaning products. The addiction started when I was hanging out with a friend one day, and she was sipping on her iced coffee. God, I want something sweet so bad. You know how long it's been since I've had sugar? It's not worth it. You look great now. What's more important, eating ice cream or being able to see your penis?
You're asking the wrong guy.
Have you tried Splenda?
What's that?
It's fake sugar. It's pretty good. Here, I have an extra one I didn't use in my coffee.
So I opened it, and I gave it a taste. From that moment on, life had a brand new meaning. How did I not know about this until now? This was heaven in a small paper packet. If I could, I would have dumped all those packets out in the middle of that Starbucks and just did a big Splenda angel in the middle of the store. I started using Splenda in everything. I put it in my cereal, on my vegetables, in my iced tea, and even directly into my mouth. After 2 years or so, I got up to 2 full boxes a day, which added up to 250 packets. I started talking about it on my YouTube channel, and kids would send me packets to my P.O. box. Boxes and boxes were kept stored in my powder-covered garage. It looked like I was involved in some kind of drug smuggling operation. I even planned out my own funeral. Instead of dropping flowers into a 6-foot-deep hole before burying me, I wanted my family and friends to drop in Splenda packets with handwritten notes on them. I like thinking about death a lot. Another one of my addictions. The overdose of Splenda mixed with my unhealthy diet of chicken and vegetables and nothing else brought me to the hospital 6 times in 1 year. My life was on a downward spiral, and I couldn't get a grip on it. I was constantly passing out from dehydration and having intense panic attacks that my doctors thought were side effects from way too much artificial sugar and way too much caffeine. My family was always concerned, but there was nothing they could say that would make me change my mind. I loved that sweet poison, and I didn't care about the side effects. At one point, my skin even turned yellow. And not in that cute, fake tanner way. In a holy-shit-why-is-that-guy-yellow way. Which leads me to this specific trip to the ER,
which changed everything. It was a hot summer day in Florida, and my family and I were hanging out at Disney World. I had never been there before, so I was ready to see what all the hype was about. I was ready to ride some dumb rides and get stopped a million times for pictures by Japanese tourists who thought I was Zac Efron. I had my huge iced tea with 50 Splendas mixed in, and I was ready to take on the day. The thing about Florida that I wasn't aware of is that they have the occasional summer rainstorm. My first thought was, oh my god, my hair. Those Japanese tourists are going to mistake me for Vanessa Hudgens. My second thought was, oh my god, humidity. I did not do well with humidity. Not only did I hate that sticky feeling, but I was already constantly dehydrated, so when it got humid outside, I would start feeling insanely lightheaded. The rain started sprinkling, and my hair started frizzing. I started having a full panic attack because I could feel the hot Florida air entering my lungs and sucking out all the moisture. My heart was racing because I knew that soon I was going to pass out. Every time I had passed out in the past, it was because I was overheated, and the last thing I wanted to do was pass out at Disney World and get trampled by people running to get a picture with a former convict wearing a Monsters, Inc. costume. I ran to the bathroom because I figured it would be air-conditioned. My brother followed me inside.
Dude, are you okay?
Yeah, Jared, I just need air. I need cold air. The bathroom didn't have air conditioning, so he started splashing cold water from the sink in my face. This is when things began to get foggy, and I don't really remember much of what happened next. I got so dehydrated that I went a little crazy and started acting like a child star having a breakdown in front of the TMZ cameras. My brother told me later what happened, and it went a little something like this.
I think the devil is in me.
What?
He's in me. He's in me. I want him out.
So I guess I took down my pants and hopped into a cold water-filled sink and started screaming obscenities.
Get him out of me! I'm gonna shit him out!
My mom rushed in and saw me having a total mental breakdown, so she called 911. The next thing I knew, I was waking up in a hospital room with Disney characters all over the walls. I thought I was in hell. As I lay in the hospital bed, I looked over and saw my mom sleeping in the chair next to me. She looked so tired. Not just tired because it was early in the morning, but because of the constant trips back and forth to the hospital. They were wearing on her. I could see it in her face, and all the emotional distress of seeing her son slowly die a fake sugary death right in front of her was taking its toll. The doctor walked in with a clipboard and a concerned look on his face.
Hello, Shane.
Hey, what's going on?
So, you had a little bit of an episode, didn't you?
I don't remember. Oh god, did I kill someone? My mom always says I remind her of one of those kids that would snap one day.
No, you passed out. You were severely dehydrated, but don't worry, we're giving you lots of fluids.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
Fine?
Yeah, it happens all the time. I pass out at least once a month, pretty much. The ER by my house and I are friends on MySpace.
Why do you pass out? How is your diet?
Not great.
I'd like you to tell me. I want to understand what's going on here.
Well, I eat okay. Chicken and veggies. It's the fake sugar that's kind of a situation.
How much fake sugar are you eating?
Only like 250 packets a day. Usually a couple gallons of iced tea. Sometimes a 12-pack of diet soda. The expression on his face will forever be burned into my brain. He looked like he was having a that's-so-raven vision. But instead of seeing something funny between him and his kooky redhead friend Chelsea, he was seeing me dead. I know, doctor. It's pretty bad.
You need to get off that ASAP. It's extremely bad for you. How much water do you drink?
I swallow some by accident when I brush my teeth.
Shane, I'm going to share something with you that I haven't even told your family. When you came in here today, you were so dehydrated that you were inches away from slipping into a coma. If you had waited a few more hours to come in, you would probably be in one right now.
Oh my god, really?
Your entire insides were drier than a potato chip. Your brain was malfunctioning, which is why you were sitting in a public sink trying to shit out the devil.
What?
It's serious, Shane. Really, really serious.
That hit me hard. It wasn't just about me anymore. It was about everyone in my life.
If I ended up in a coma, or even worse, dead, that would affect so many people. The taste of that sweet, sugary powder wasn't worth it anymore. I know the old saying, nothing tastes as good as thin feels. Well, nothing tastes as good as being alive, either. From that moment forward, I decided to get off the packet once and for all. But I want to be clear. It wasn't just the fake sugar that was causing me to go to the hospital. It was everything related to it. I was drinking gallons of iced tea every day because it tasted so good with Splenda in it. Iced tea is insanely dehydrating. Combine that with the fact that I hadn't had actual water in a year, and you get a recipe for a coma. I also wasn't eating right, and I hadn't been for a long time. I would starve myself, and then I would go on binges and eat crazy amounts of frozen yogurt and ranch dressing. Not together. I'm mentally sick, but not that sick. So I started changing my diet and got on a normal routine, but the road has not been easy. At 26 years old, I still struggle every day with my addictions. All I want to do is get a big gallon of ice cream and lie in bed all day and watch Netflix. But I can't. I don't want my addictions to rule my life. This is a huge reason why I don't drink or do any kind of drugs. I can't imagine what my life would be like if I tried cocaine. I'm sure my house would be super clean, and I'd be way funnier to hang out with, but the side effects would not be worth it. I think one day I might be able to just have one packet of Splenda and be okay, or just have one drink and not turn into a raging alcoholic. But I'm not there yet. Right now, I'm just living one daily vlog at a time. Oh, did I mention I was addicted to YouTube? YouTube got me fired. I've always been a hard-working guy. It's actually one of my downfalls. Well, that and dipping sauces. Ooh, I can really fuck up the condiments bar at a Fuddruckers. Waitresses always think I'm joking when I ask for a serving tray of different dipping sauce options with my meal. They laugh and tell me how hilarious I am. I don't laugh and tell them to get me a tray of sauces now. When I was 7, my first job was getting the newspaper every morning from my front porch and taking it upstairs to my grandma. I know it sounds simple, but I was obese and my front porch had like 6 steps, so it was a daily struggle. Also, the fact that I had to walk up another 30 steps to get to my grandma's bedroom made it damn near impossible. I saw a commercial for one of those electronic stair chairs for handicapped people that literally lifts you from the first floor all the way up to the second story of the house. It was on my wish list to Santa every year. I never got it. But I did get a Princess Diana Beanie Baby in a glass box, so I guess all is forgiven. When I was 12, I moved on to bigger and better things. I sent my letter of resignation to my grandma and told her that I needed to explore other options. There was more out there for me. More than just getting the paper every morning in exchange for a few fat-free Snackwell cookies. I was going to be the richest kid on our block, which wasn't saying a lot considering the richest kid on our block still couldn't afford braces at 15. Poor kid looked like he took a bite out of the street. I was going to be a success, and I was going to do it the American way, make a bunch of shitty products and force my neighbors to buy them because they felt bad for me. I had a plethora of ideas. Some were better than others, but they all had one thing in common. They were terrible. One was a frozen ice cream pop that was made from fat-free yogurt and peanut butter. It literally ripped off my taste buds and made my tongue bleed for 2 hours. But instead of adjusting the recipe to make it not tongue-bleedingly dangerous, I just decided to sell it the way it was. I sold about 10 of them on the first day, which was great, but shockingly, I didn't get any reorders. So it was time to move on to my next product, friendship bracelets. What do you need to show that you and a friend care about each other? Not open communication. Not acceptance of each other's flaws. No, no, no. You need shitty-ass bracelets that are impossible to take off, so you end up getting dirt, shit, and garbage all over them. Yeah, that's what friendship is. I sold about 15 of them, and I felt like I had struck gold. You should have heard my pitch. It usually went a little something like this. Ding dong. An old lady opens her door. Ooh, is it Girl Scout cookie season already? No, I'm not a girl and I don't have cookies. Oh, well, that's unfortunate. But I do have something better. Save it, I'm an atheist. I don't know what that word means, I'm 12. Well, by the looks of you and what God gave you to work with,
You'll know that word pretty well in your teens.
Looking forward to it. What I'm actually here about is a product that I'm very excited to share with you. Tell me, do you have any friends?
They're all dead.
Great. Well, wouldn't it be nice to have something to remember them by?
My last friend stole my husband, so that's kind of hard to forget.
Wow, that got dark really fast. Well, I have something more uplifting than a rage-filled, vengeful heart. How about... I whip out some shitty bracelets from my home improvement lunchbox.
Friendship bracelets! Cute. I'm closing the door now. I have to change my colostomy bag. This experience has completely filled it.
Please hear me out, Mrs... I don't know your name, so I'll just call you Mrs. Beautiful? She blushed. Not sure if it was flattery or embarrassment from the smell of her colostomy bag leaking, but either way, she was engaged. Now, who's somebody in your life that you can really rely on?
My cat, Cheddar.
Great, but let's try a human. Silence. Mrs. Beautiful, do you want to be my friend?
Not really.
Okay, then let's just be bracelet buddies. I tied a bracelet on her wrist. Whenever you look down at this bracelet, just remember that there's somebody in the world wearing the same bracelet on the same wrist looking down at it too. I tied a matching bracelet on my wrist. So whenever you look down, you won't feel alone. Kind of cool, right?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
She smiled, adjusted her bracelet, got it to the right fit, and looked back up at me.
You give that speech to all the lonely ladies on the block?
I'm only wearing one bracelet, ma'am. We shared a smile, she handed me $5, and I was on my way. Now, I'm not going to lie, I was playing with her emotions. I knew that she was lonely, and that the feeling of having someone who cared about her might make her more inclined to buy something from me. But is that so bad? She was a sad old woman who smelled like feces and had a cat named after a type of government cheese. Who wouldn't feel bad for her? But that's what made me such a great salesman. I cared. Which led me to my next job, which was 6 years and a lot of hair product later. A weight loss product salesman. I walked into the front door of a very prominent national weight loss center in Huntington Beach, California, 2 days after my 18th birthday. I was ready for a grown-up job. Selling bracelets to old ladies isn't as cute when you're a teenager with constant accidental boners. I needed something with benefits and responsibilities. Something that I could be proud of. And to me, helping people shed pounds was perfect. Besides, I knew these people. These were my people. I could share all my experiences with them and show them that there was a light at the end of the tunnel. If only the company had felt the same way. From what I could tell, even on the first day of the job, its mission was to make as much money off fat people as possible. For those of you who don't know how weight loss management companies work, I'll break it down for you. Imagine a grocery store where the lady at the checkout counter asks you to reveal your darkest demons and then gives you a smiley face sticker and asks for your credit card. It's pretty much like that. Except in this case, that old lady at the checkout was an 18-year-old boy who had no idea how to help people with their psychological problems and no nutritional knowledge whatsoever. Before walking through the front door of the center, I did have to go through 5 days of Nutrition 101, which sounds way more informative than it actually was. It was basically me and 6 other hopeful employees sitting in a creepy back room of some abandoned weight loss center being lectured by a suicidal divorcee about the food pyramid. One of our topics of the day was, things my ex-husband eats that makes him a fat piece of shit. That one was pretty informative, actually. After 5 days of that, we got a certificate, which I'm pretty sure you could just find on Google Images and print out, and we were given the go-ahead to join the family. Sitting with a group of older women being told that we were now joining the family made the whole thing very sister wives. I was the gay-looking husband, and these were my unattractive, annoying significant others who I secretly hoped would die in a house fire while I was at work. The first thing I did before starting my new job was go to Target and get the fanciest first day outfit I could find for $20 or less. I purchased ill-fitting black pants that showcased my white gym socks underneath, a faux silk button-up shirt that was not sweat-resistant. and a two sizes too tight Jonas Brothers vest that had vanity buttons on the shoulders. Looking back, I looked like a claymation Tim Burton character, but at the time, I thought I was the shit. I even remember thinking, wow, if I ever win a Teen Choice Award, I'm totally gonna rock this on the purple carpet. Which happened, and I did. But that's another embarrassing story for another time. Back to fat pimping. I walked into the weight loss center, and to my surprise, there was nobody there. It was creepy, like an abandoned city in a zombie movie. All that was left was empty chairs with coats hanging off the back, and the lingering smell of cheese curls. After about 10 minutes of looking around, I opened up the back door, and there they were, all the employees, smoking cigarettes, eating gyros from a truck, and having a burping contest. And the best part is that they were all doing this while standing under a huge sign that said, "Live Healthy." The irony was bigger than my before picture. It was practically busting out of the seams. It was then I realized that this whole company was a facade, and it was just another way for America to make money off of fat people. But I didn't hate the job. I ended up working there for the next 3 years, and I became one of the most successful salespeople in the entire country. I would have the bigwigs come up to me at conventions and ask, "Wow, how did you do it, Shane? How did you sell so much?" My response was simple. I care. I actually wanted to sell the clients the food and see them every week, because I wanted them to succeed and lose the weight. But I also had a winning sales pitch to help me out when a new customer wasn't biting. Ding. The scale hits a high number. The new customer is in denial. The customer looks at me and says, "Well, that's not right. Maybe it's my shoes." "It's not your shoes. It's time for you to take control of your life. Today." I don't know how I let myself get so big. You ate a lot. The amount you ate in a single sitting is enough to feed a house of relatives in an African village.
"How dare you?"
Yes, I did. I dared myself to take control of my life. And I did. I lost 150 pounds, and so can you. Do you want to hear more about our program?
"I don't know. Is it expensive?"
"It's $500 a year, plus the cost of food."
"What? That's insane. I can't afford that."
"Let me ask you something. If your car broke down today, what would you do?"
"Fix it."
"Yes, of course you would. What if it was going to cost you $5,000, and if you didn't fix it, your car would blow up?"
"I'd pay it."
"Well, this is your life, which is way more valuable than a car. And you're willing to spend $5,000 on a hunk of metal, but not $500 on your life? Now, does that make sense to you?"
"Wow, I never thought of it that way."
"That's why I'm here, ma'am. Welcome to the family."
Cha-ching!
I hate to say it, but I was the shit. And I wasn't lying with my sales pitch. I believed every word I was saying. I really thought this job was what I was born to do. Until it ended. I was early to work that fateful day, strolling in at 7 a.m. wearing the most unflattering outfit Macy's had to offer. I had been promoted the week before, so I had to really step up my game. Target just wasn't cutting it anymore. I needed real silk, enough of that faux shit. My hair was bone straight and my pimply face clean shaven. I was ready to start the day. When I walked in, I greeted everyone like they were family, because after 3 years of working there, they were. I looked at my before and after picture, which was hanging on the wall in the lobby, and I gave it a good luck fist bump. I walked back to my office and opened the door and saw a stranger sitting in my chair. She was fat, so I thought she was a new client. "Oh, I'm sorry. The waiting area is in the lobby. I'll be right out, and I'll bring you back to weigh you. I'm excited to start this journey with you." My hand reached out for a friendly shake. It was not received.
"I'm not a client. I'm from the corporate offices, Shane."
"Really?" I looked her up and down. Not really the vision of health someone who works at a weight loss corporate office should be. But hey, who was I to judge? "Oh, okay. So can I help you?"
"I would like you to pack all your stuff and be off the premises in 5 minutes.
What?
"Time is ticking."
Stopwatch activated.
"What are you talking about? Is this a prank? Is this like some kind of fat punked?" Is some fat Ashton Kutcher gonna pop out of the freezer room and yell, gotcha?
I'm not Ashton Kutcher, Shane. Please pack your things.